Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
And is whether you are misogynistic against somebody because they're a woman or you're doing it because of their age, they can be placed in the same level of bias and they create the same issues and problems. You know, so and that's the system I think that not just indigenous and Native American people go through. I think that that's happening all throughout the globe right now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I believe that there's a fear that, you know, this, and I think all human beings are going through this cycle of fear of feeling obsolete, right? And not knowing what their value is going to be in the future, especially if their talents, gifts, or skills are no longer necessary. And when you look at places like Osaka, Japan, or places where people live to an older age, these people have systems to where they take care of their elder. Right. So you don't fear not being in this position because the same level of respect and reverence will still be given to you. So whether I'm here or whether I'm there, I still have the same level of value or even more value. And I think that that's where, you know, people that are in positions of power fear that if I vacate this seat, then nobody will care about me anymore.
Well, no one wants to be discarded. But then there's also the work of realizing then that you're more than just your legacy, right? Mm-hmm. You're more than just this business that you created, right? And that's really hard for people to separate themselves from.
Yeah.
Their identity is based on just the work they've done or the business they created. Who am I if I'm not the CEO of this company anymore? Mm-hmm. Existential crisis.
Yeah.
You're still you with gifts.
Yeah.
Go pour that into the next generation or do something else with it.
Look at Joe Biden.
Give it up.
That man goddamn shit.
Give it up.
And he be speaking up there. It's like he talking at his own funeral.
Wrap it up.
You
feel what me? Are we doing?
And I think he a representation of, like, you know, this dying system that just doesn't want to give
up.
He's a physical representation of it.
Yes.
And it's over, but it's like he can't see it.
I know.
Right? And I think that that's something that you have to be very careful of, knowing when your time is up in your position. And when somebody else is better fitted for it, right? And sometimes, you know, just because you're elder don't mean you're no longer fitted for it. And just because somebody's young and they got ideas don't mean they should be in there. But it's like, recognize when somebody else can serve better in your position.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And that could be the system of, all right, let me allow somebody else to be where I am now.
Well, that's humility.
And evolution.
So many people are lacking humility, which allows you to evolve, right? Yeah, letting go of the ego.
Yeah. So let me ask you about your spiritual systems. You know, my good sister, Queen Najdaha, had invited me to a sweat lodge.
Oh, that's my sister.
Yeah.
I was just with her.
It was hot.
It is very hot.
And dark.
Yes, it is.
You know what I'm saying? And it was spirits all around. And it was definitely a test. I wanted it to be hotter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They act like they was trying to baby us a little bit. So next time I do a sweat lodge, I want extreme.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sweat me out. Let me quit because I'm not going to quit. But, you know, that was a very powerful practice. And she was talking about how they have these rites of passage, mm-hmm. right? You take the young man, send him out in the forest at a certain age. He has to go forest for himself, right? Find it, create his own shelter, live out there for 3 days. And it's to break this bubble of dependency and create a readiness for the world that I am now a man, right? And there was Huey P. Newton who talked about this as well. And he talked about how his family had a rites of passage when a newborn was coming to the family. The older male would take the child out for their first walk into the sun, mm-hmm. representing, I'm going to be there to protect you in life, right? And him taking on a responsibility, sort of like a parental figure, that this is my responsibility as well. Because you have the mother and the father, you know, the father creates that skin contact with the son to create this connection. The mother has the baby come out of her womb. She's already connected, but the siblings have to then have a rites of passage to create their connection.
Yeah.
And so it had me thinking of our lack of rituals, our lack of rites, right? Mm-hmm. Our lack of spiritual codes yeah. that create the ability for us to have these systems that affect us and protect us for these seven generations.
Absolutely.
What are some of the spiritual systems, rites, or rituals or passages that you believe that may be unique to your upbringing, your cultural codes, mm-hmm. or whatsoever?
Yeah, I think for me, it's interesting that you say that, this rite of passage. I didn't have any ceremony mm-hmm. like that. And I think it's really due to boarding school era. It's due to assimilation, right? Mm. We're talking about my grandma's great-grandfather, who was the first to attend Carlisle Indian boarding school, right? And her dad being a very Catholic religious man, right? My grandmother and her 14 siblings
yeah.
born on the reservation, but were born in a very Catholic religious household. My mom was born in the 70s, and thank God for my mom and growing up watching her be a part of community and running community programs for, you know, urban natives, for me to really understand how important it is to be connected to culture and ceremony, right? So a lot of my ceremony has been sweat lodge, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of it has been powwow, right? Where some of the elders will say, that's not traditional ceremony, right? But we've had to adapt as Native people to reclaim what works for us, right? To also relearn what has been erased from our mm-hmm. cultures, right? A lot of those medicine bundles mm-hmm. haven't been passed down. Mm-hmm. A lot of those sacred teachings aren't here with us, yeah. right? Because so many elders were afraid to share them, right? And then with COVID, how many elders did we lose, right? We're trying to revitalize language. We were trying to bring back tradition, right? And I think for me, what's been really helpful is receiving my name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we believe as Menominee people that you will not be able to go meet Creator and transition to spirit world if you don't have your native name, right? Mm. And that native name comes from your medicine man. And when he is preparing for that ceremony, he's going into this dream state to receive your name. And so you can say, okay, you know, your family's like, okay, we're going to get you your name. You might not get it for like 6 months, yeah. a year, a couple. It's when it comes.
What's
right?
your native name?
Noctow Pianuki.
Noctow Pianuki.
Noctow Pianuki.
Noctow Pianuki.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Comes first woman.
Comes first woman.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. fire.
So I think that right there was this, not a coming of age, but coming into my indigeneity and this other level, right? Growing up, I grew up dancing in the powwow circle. You know, I was a jingle dress dancer, and that dress brings healing to those who are sick in our community. Mm. I didn't know that when I was like 2-3 years old yeah. running around there, but I knew that that was the dance that I wanted to do. I knew that was the regalia that yeah, I wanted to wear, you know? So yeah, I think again, it's just, someone shared something to me the other day. They were telling me about how they were used to work at this community center in Minnesota, right? And this Native woman came in and said to this other Native woman, can you teach me how to make a dream catcher? And she was like, I don't know how to make a dream catcher. Like, what? Like, I know I'm Native, but I don't know how to make that.
Yeah.
And she was like, we are, because we're Native, because we know or we're indigenous, there's just kind of misconception that we know all of the traditions and cultural things and protocols.
Well, yeah.
We're not born knowing them all, right?
Yeah.
So many of us are relearning, right? Because we had grandparents who were scared to go to ceremony. My grandmother couple years ago, I asked her about powwow. I was like, Grandma, you never go to powwow. Like, you know what? And she said, I never went to powwow. I wasn't allowed to. And I was like, what? And then I had to remember, oh, it was illegal.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't have the right to be in powwow, practice our ceremonial ways, sit with our traditional medicines until the 1970s, right? Mm. Through the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, it was the first time we were granted the legal right to have a relationship with Creator in our way. How crazy is that, right? Mm. And it wasn't until like 1993 that then the peyote was allowed to come into that play also, right? So I think, you know, for a lot of us younger generation Indigenous peoples, right, it's a lot about like relearning, unlearning, reclaiming, and figuring out what works for us.
Yeah, because you know what? Native Americans got so many dope things, though.
Yeah, we do.
You know what I mean? I was going through the other week, and I started discovering all these Native American musicians and singers hip-hop artists, and they were raw, though.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got the thing where they speak from the throat, so it'd be like, but it's, and I'm not giving it justice, but...
Well, if you know Queen Yahajna, she was bringing, you know, mad Native hip-hop artists to New York City. We had the pleasure of hosting them, you know, at the Urban Indigenous Collective. But there's so many great talents and so many gems within Indigenous communities. And because of the erasure, because of the disconnection, you know, we lack visibility. Mm-hmm. But I think with social media, we're starting to see more of that visibility. Yeah. And a lot of us are coming into urban spaces where, like New York City, we have one of the largest populations of urban natives in the country, right? But we haven't until, you know, some of us new trailblazers have, you know, taken a seat and said, okay, like we're going to create a space for us.
Yeah.
But creating a space for us to be able to recognize all the talent, all the voices, all the strategy, thinkers, innovators, so that we can like make some things happen here.
Yeah, I would love to connect more with a lot of Native American people and learn more.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I can sometimes be a bulldozer. You know, you walk into a room. So I don't know. You might not know what's respectful, what's sacred, what's all of these different ways. So, you know, but I'm always willing to learn.
Well, that's it. That's all you need. And when you don't know, ask, you know? And that's humility. That's it.
Because I believe that there's a lot of Black people in America that I think naturally register with a lot of Native American spirit. And then there's some who naturally register with African spirituality.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, my younger brother, he got his wolf tribe thing he got going on. And I believe he has a real, if I was to look at him, he has much more of a Native American spirit than an African spirit.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Just in his regalia and his music and his representation. And I don't think it's something that he tries to do. I just think it's a natural thing that you can see. But we haven't, you know, dug deep into our genealogy to study that. Even on my father's side, he spoke about it. But it's
well,
like
you need to do that. Let me stop.
We will.
A tree without its roots?
That's you gonna need be to in know my next 19 all, minutes.
Okay, I'm gonna tune in because that's so important. How can you heal your, you know, historical or intergenerational trauma if you don't know all your ancestors? Yeah. How can you recognize all your gifts if you don't know all the ancestors, all the grandmothers, all the grandfathers you came from? You know, and it's hard, but also being Black, you know, and I identify with this as well. I can trace all my ancestors back on the Native side.
But you know, sometimes we can't trace our ancestors because our ancestors killed some white men and they disappeared. And
that's
then
true.
That trail stopped. So sometimes it just represents we one of the ones. You know what I'm talking about?
You know, you can connect with them through prayer and through ceremony and that plant medicine.
All of the, see, none of my ancestors were suckers. That's the thing.
That's right.
You know, we come from a long lineage of killers. You feel me? The warrior type. You feel me? That's why I registered. Like, what registers in my spirit is John Horton. You know, I love his story because, and I bring it up a lot, but he fought for his freedom so many times. You know, he fought, you know, for America, against America, with the Native Americans against America, right? He was a slave within the Native Americans, a different system, and then he was a slave in America. Right. He thought he got his freedom going to Florida and then they reneged on that. He had to fight again. Then ultimately end up going to Mexico. Then he had to fight some more. And it's like the average person doesn't even know his story. But his story is a connection between the Native American and the African, right? There were so many families that was being, you know, birthed, right, from those unions.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a history we don't even dwell in at all.
At all.
So when we talk about repatriation and connection to Africa without even diving into our history here in America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to go back to the wars.
Yeah, deep interconnection, so much intersectionality, right? And I think even when we think about like honorary natives, mm-hmm. right, with the freedmen's, right, and how they became native because, you know, they were slaves of that tribe. Mm-hmm. And then when slavery was outlawed, allegedly, at that time, they said, okay, we're going to make you honorary natives. Mm-hmm. So you have this whole line of folks who are Black, are enrolled in a federally recognized tribe and have the same federal status as any other Native person, right? But yeah, I think no one talks about this.
It was a lot of trickery, you know.
The biggest tricksters, aren't they?
Hell yeah. I mean, you know, they just came out with the movie of Way of the Flower Moon. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
But that shows you, I think it just shows you, number one, the greed of America, but the history that we don't speak upon, but it's such a deep reality. And so, of course, people want to move over the past, but you can't, because the past makes some people feel guilty. Well, they
Let them feel guilty, but that's why it's so important when we have movies like Killers of the Flower Moon,
Killers of the Flower Moon.
And we have allies like Leonardo DiCaprio who aren't going to try to play this white savior in the movie. He's going to play the villain, right? And he's going to back this, right? And I think it's so important when
he backed that movie, you said?
Yeah, you know, and he has backed so many different movies that really center indigenous stories, right, that need to be told. And yeah, I'm sure it made a lot of people uncomfortable. We were invited to the premiere and, you know, it was really great to be there. But, you know, we have to move through that uncomfortability and have uncomfortable dialogue so that we can heal. This is the restorative justice, right? This is how we move forward. We can't just keep it under the rug. And that's what a lot of our, you know, ancestors and grandparents did. Like, we just don't talk about it. We're just going to keep going. We're just going to leave it over here, though.
And it's interesting because in reality, the only people that I see we have anything in common with is Native American people. Everybody else, you can compare your struggles and history. It's not the same because you are perpetrators and oppressors in our struggle as well. So you don't get to have alliance, you know, when you are part of the oppression.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Even when we look at that movie, you see, you know, the men who were a part of it. It was white men. It was Jewish men. And this is a history we shouldn't have to get through Hollywood cinema. You know what I'm saying? Like,
should be just taught in schools, right?
Yeah,
so with
should
the education system.
But we know the education system is to create a narrative for people to follow.
Of course.
Or not to actually give us true history. And this is where you can go big Florida and the school systems to teach you proper history. Or we can cipher amongst ourselves and get that, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Open source.
The moment that you believe the government is supposed to do your job, right, then you have to go along with the quality of the way they do their job.
Yeah, and even thinking of the government's here to help us.
No, like, that ain't their job.
That's their job. It's to keep us where they want us to be. It's to keep us complacent. It's to keep us sheep. You know, they try to little dog us.
Yeah, but we're big dogs.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So let me get into this last point about your advocacy, right? Can you explain to us some of the history of your advocacy and some of the future of it and some things that you would like to bring more exposure to?
Yeah. So, you know, I think I found my voice as an activist when I was 17 years old in inner city Milwaukee. I was a part of something called Urban Underground.
Okay.
So Reggie Moore and Charlene Moore.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Or they're my activist parents, but they brought inner city youth together to really identify who were the leaders of the community, right? So it was a whole application process of like 800, right? And I became part of the cohort, and they taught us how to, you know, use our voices. I always say they knew I had a voice before I did, you know? And they helped cultivate it, right? They taught us how to create social justice campaigns and organize. And I just owe so much to them because they saw something in me that I didn't have the power to recognize at that moment. But from then, you know, I dreamt so big, you know. Before that, you know, my mindset was so small. I'm just going to stay in Wisconsin and be here, and I'm just going to be a therapist. And
yeah.
The world was at my fingertips, right? It was the first time second time I got on a plane and I went to DC. They took me to DC for a conference, and I went to Howard University, and I just got to see the world in such a different light, right? But yeah, I moved to New York City when I was 18 years old, so-called New York, right? We call it Lenape Hoking or Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And really wanted to just better understand the historical and intergenerational trauma of my family and what I was experiencing. So I pursued a degree in psychology. The beginning of my career was really doing a lot of research, looking at like acculturation, right? When you're navigating two cultures in this dominant white society, how that impacts your mental health and your academic performance, and how we need these culturally appropriate modalities in school and in healthcare and in business to really be able to thrive, right? We can prove that. We know that. Right. And then early in my career, I really started looking at like innovative technologies, like how can we use the tools of technology to support the social justice causes we care about. Right. So I work for a startup called Cognito, and I helped to create one of the first culturally tailored simulations that trained law enforcement how to engage with Native youth without re-traumatizing them. Mm-hmm. So being able to teach them motivational interviewing skills and techniques and de-escalation skills, and also suicide prevention technologies for teachers to be able to recognize these like psychological markers that could indicate that a student is in distress. And how do we have those difficult conversations that can be taboo for some people, right? Mm-hmm. So that was my beginning. And then I really came into this role as a director of an urban program, right? And saw just this opportunity and need for my community to really be able to have this hub where we can bring our thoughts and prayers and traditions and arts in one place, right? But was feeling really limited in that, right? As a survivor of gender-based violence and having a relative that's a missing and murdered Indigenous woman, Ingrid Washing-Watauk, Flying Eagle Woman, I became really passionate about this MMIP movement. So if you've seen the red hand over the face, that's that movement. And really recognized that they weren't counting us in data in New York City. You know, we were getting lumped with other. And I'm like, how am I as a community member, right, supposed to be able to advocate for my community if I don't understand what the data is, right? What's the scope of violence? What's happening? So really decided to launch the Urban Indigenous Collective in 2019 with one of my co-founders, Errol Richard, and another co-founder, Jared Packard. Errol Richard is Afro-Indigenous by way of Carib Indian. She's Venezuelan in Trinidad and Tobago. And then Jared Packard is Oglala Lakota. And we were just these young, hungry, you know, grad students who really were just seeing just this gap within New York City. So decided to launch on Indigenous Peoples Day on Randall's Island, 2019. Did not see this pandemic coming, but launched with the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, Trans, and Two-Spirit program. So we have filed over 120 Freedom of Information Act requests with law enforcement to demand the data of our loved ones, of our relatives, of our kin, to really be able to understand what is happening, right? There's this misconception that, you know, this violence against Indigenous women or people is only happening on reservations. But that's not true. Urban places are just not tracking the data. Mm. I'm a lived experience. My relative Ingrid is a lived experience who lived in Brooklyn, right? So really being able to organize in that way. So tracking the data, we have an unprecedented policy tracker where we track all of the policy and legislation throughout the United States mm-hmm. with the interactive map to understand, you know, where that policy is and how we can influence it. We do a lot of work in mentorship. So young Indigenous women who come to New York City to attain higher education, we support them with stipends, we pay for their Wi-Fi, we pay for their food cards every week, we pair them with mentors, we give them individualized curriculums to help them be able to survive in a place like New York City. Mm. So we've got, you know, MOUs with Columbia University, NYU, where they bring their Indigenous students to us. So it's like this incubator that we have.
Yeah.
And a lot of community-based participatory research. I mean, we're really passionate about that data aspect, because how can we really understand what's happening if we're not being in consultation with our community? So everything that we have built and scaled has been in consultation with this ongoing surveys and qualitative focus groups, right? What we just call storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. But in the Western academia, you know, qualitative research. But this really helps inform what we're building so we can be strategic, because I just really think you can't scale a business or a movement based on your own assumptions. It has to be grounded in community consensus, right? That's the seven generations. That's kinship, right? That's what the Haudenosaunee has shown us, right? And in that, we've been able to scale in an amazing way in 4 years. So I'm really excited that we just opened up our community center in Midtown Manhattan on 39th and 8th. So when you're in New York City next, absolutely, you got to come check us out.
Absolutely.
We would be honored to have you.
First of all, respect for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
And all the work that you will do.
Thank you.
Right. It sounds like you are a true gem to your people, and you are on square and living on purpose. Mm. You know, it had me thinking as you were talking about innovative technologies.
Mm.
When we think about Africa a lot, mm-hmm. and we think about infrastructure that can be built on Africa, specifically because there's a lot of third world infrastructure there. Mm-hmm. There's a great opportunity because they don't have to rip down any existing mm-hmm. infrastructure, so they can start with mm-hmm. top line technology, right? Most of when we come in America, most of the design, architecture, the technology is of the past.
Yeah.
Right. And you can kind of date it to when it was invented, yeah. and we're still using the same thing.
That's right.
We're not using technology that is of the highest level of human innovation.
No, I think about New York City train systems,
yeah.
how old and decrepit
old
it is.
Old as hell.
Then I went to China for a month and I'm right. on bullet trains and I'm right. between cities in like right. minutes.
No, I just came from the CES show about yeah. all of the different technologies and
yeah.
it was mind blowing.
Yeah.
But you realize that America couldn't transition that fast into new technology
yeah.
because they will have to spend all the money getting rid of current technology and infrastructure.
Because they're only thinking short term. Long term, it's so much more beneficial and sustainable, right?
Yeah.
They can't get past that, right? As visionaries, we can see into the future. Mm-hmm. They can't.
But to that point, though, I believe Native Americans and Africans are in a unique position
mm-hmm.
because they haven't built,
mm-hmm.
right? So now you can start with top of the line technology, cities, and anything that you want to build. And it would be far more impressive and greater than the existing systems and or cities. So it's like, it's almost got to this point where it was a gift. Whereas like you kind of waited till technology got to a peak,
yeah.
right? And then you say, okay, now we'll start building.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. So that means that the land that the Native Americans own and mm-hmm. the continent of Africa and the different countries can start building the future cities of the world.
Yes.
And I believe that's truly the pathway of where we should be at right now. And if there should be a greater bridge, number one, because as Black Americans, we think about, you know, what is our role in the world? And we have a great role. We are the influencers of social justice, you know, and the fight for equality and freedom and liberation all across the planet Earth.
Yeah.
But also we have a particular skill set and know-how, right? Yeah. Because we've been in this world,
mm-hmm.
right? If we go over to America, to Africa, the best thing is, you know, what can we help build over there?
Well,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been so amazed. So I'm an MIT fellow.
Mm-hmm.
We have founded a company called Chalk Talk that connects Native users to Indigenous therapists,
mm-hmm.
Leveraging AI, Calendly, mm-hmm. Zoom, a unique stack deck, right? And in that fellowship and in that cohort, I got to see so many Indigenous entrepreneurs, right, and visionaries that are creating amazing, innovative technology for so many different avenues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're absolutely correct. When I was able to create that culturally tailored simulation back in 2015, I think that mm-hmm. was, right? It was right after I graduated with my bachelor's. This was the first time this innovative technology had come to Indian country, right? But these training simulations have been making their rounds in white America, right? Teaching teachers how to have, like, you know, these difficult conversations with suicidal ideation,
mm-hmm.
right? But why is it that Native people, you know, and Black people are the last to receive the innovative technology to be able to heal, right? But I think, you know, when we're talking about infrastructure, absolutely. What it's going to need, what it's going to require is education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming into the communities and being able to share our vision, right?
Yeah.
So that they can get, you know, on the same frequency, because it can seem scary if they don't understand something, because for elders, things
yeah.
are moving so fast and they're like, what? VR, MetaQuest, crypto? Like, oh my yeah. gosh, right?
So it's Which like, is funny because yeah. all this stuff really has already been around.
It has.
And it's really, when you think about the people, and here's, I think, a lot of the fear comes from, like when I went to CES, I only see like 24 Black people out of tens of thousands of people. This is their largest conference, right? And so a lot of the fear comes from our ignorance,
oh, yeah.
right? And it's like, it's not the technology we fear, right? The technology will do what we say.
Yeah.
If we build it and we design it,
right?
and we code it.
Yeah.
And it's
We're
like,
oh, creators.
Yeah. We really fear not executing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We fear not being involved. And so, you know, that is the challenge of getting over that fear to get started. You're going to see billionaires build new cities.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be easier to build a new city than rip out an old city and give new technology.
Yeah, they're calling it conscious communities. I was at the World Economic Forum and I spoke there and I could not, the theme that I was coming across in my conversations, right? I just wanted to talk to as many people as I could. Is this conscious community that they're building, these islands and this land. And, you know, they've got these plans and they've got the investors to do it. And that's the one thing I'd say is like, yes, you know, tribes have the land. Some tribes are much richer than others, right?
Right.
Because of casinos or the way they diversify their portfolio, right? And their economic investments. But for many, we need people to step in, right? So it's not only education that I think is lacking, but it's also the economic investment that's necessary, right? Because we've had to rely on the government so much, right?
And I think there's, and even we know this as Black mm-hmm. people, there's a lack of communication and outreach, right? We don't have large scale conversations. You talk about WEF, right? You mm-hmm. go to Davos, they talk about how to mm-hmm. run the world, right? Problems of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when do we sit together and we say, okay, let's have a conversation between the scientists and the engineers mm-hmm. of our culture, right? Let's bring all the Native and Indigenous, you know, engineers, scientists, architects, things of that nature, and have a round table and discuss this in front of the rest of the tribes.
No,
right?
I agree.
Like,
I
that's
agree.
Goal is to take their systems, create our own so we can build what we want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And it's not replicating it, right? Because not everything is a one size fit all. But how do we culturally tailor in a way
yeah.
that feels in alignment for us? And I think that's like so true, because so many conferences that I go to, I'm like, okay, great. I'm learning so much. Knowledge exchange is happening.
Yeah.
Silos are breaking down. Great. Because I get to meet people I would have never got the pleasure of meeting if I would have stayed in my room. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what are we doing after this?
Yeah.
You know, what
it's
are we doing?
It's about that action.
How do we stay accountable? Like, what are we doing? What are we creating? What are the spaces? And this is happening, what, every 6 months, every year, where we're tracking it, you know, what we see within the United Nations. But so bureaucratic, things move so slow. So I think we're really in need of something like that, a space like that.
Yeah, but that's why it's almost like you just got to, but like yourself, you just got to do it. And just like, respectfully, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, well, that's
it. And then you got to like it or not afterwards.
Some people don't like me and some elders, you know.
But I don't, the goal is not to be liked.
That's it. I'm doing the work that feels in alignment. Yeah. And if I can wake up with myself and feel gratitude and at peace in my heart, then that's it.
Well, then think about the elders might not like you, but their children will love you.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and that's what matters the most. You know, with the Urban Indigenous Collective, the kids love us.
And that's not even just a message to Indigenous people. That's a message to all people around the world that are dealing with that same struggle.
That's right.
You can't ask for permission. You got to go on the mission. You just got
to
do it.
Listen to the kids.
I believe we in a time of do or die. If you don't do it now, you know, it's like you become your own oppressor at this point.
That's right.
Right? Your lack of pushing that button and going is the oppressor today.
Yeah,
your fear
have time.
Is the oppressor.
Yeah.
If you got the land or whether you got the resources or you're not willing to create connections or outlook or outreach and communicate with people to leverage what you have to build. The excuses always going to be there. Some of us have no resources at all.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Others have resources. So you have to start with where you are, right?
That's right.
And so, you know, I know a few of the sisters, you know, that are doing things and they just go for it. You feel me? And that's the message that I think ultimately I would love this conversation to be about. Like, what does the future? And a young brother asked me this today. Mm-hmm. He was like, how do we impregnate the people with the ideas of the future? I'm like, first of all, plan it out to a T. You know, create, most of the time when a person want to build a city, they create a model city first, right? Show people the model city, how it works.
Yeah,
we don't do enough of that, right? We don't do enough brainstorming and coming together and say, this is the future we want to build. Now you get to deny it, but you're denying the future. You want to keep what's here or you want to build this?
Well,
you force people's hands when you give a vision to a people, and then the people become dissatisfied with those who are in the way of the vision being brought out. So that's sort of the strategy right now.
Yeah, well, one, there's never a right time to start. There's always going to be things that happen, variables that we can't control. You just got
to
go.
There's a right time to start.
Well, you just got
to
go. So now. I mean, like, you can't wait. Like, you're going to keep bringing excuses on why it has to be later, or you need this or you need that. You just got to go, right?
Yeah.
But I think, we're in a really interesting time where, like you said, people are too scared to start. To the fact that we don't even have a pilot or a model. And that is what's so beautiful about entrepreneurship is that, like, you create an innovative idea and there is multiple iterations and there are so many moments where you have to pivot, and all of that is okay because it's never been done before what you're creating. And I think that's the humility to say, okay, we haven't done this, but we're just going to do it because it's needed. And that's what I saw with the Urban Indigenous Collective, right? There was nobody doing exactly what we were doing in the way we were doing it and the way we were thinking about it. And is it what it was 4 years ago? No, because it's evolved, right? It's breathing on its own. It's walking on its own. And there's so many different pivots and iterations, and being able to be flexible and allow that movement to happen is what has allowed us to scale in the way we have in four years, right? So I think, let's just do it and figure it out as we go. Like, that's the energy. Like, I need that type of energy. Let's just do it.
Well, thank you. This is 19 Minutes with 19 Keys. May y'all stay tapped in. Thank you very much.
Machua Wainan, a big thank you.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.